Patriots Football Weekly is delivered to you by W.B. Mason, the official office supplier of the New England Patriots. Who but W.B. Mason? Morning Meeting, brought to you by Verizon. Better matters.
Well, guys, Carolina's coming to town. The best defense in the league, not a very good offense. But that was the case last week as well, or it was supposed to be.
But another week where the quarterback is dangerous, especially with his legs.
Okay. Another week, though?
Yeah, did you watch Deshaun Watson?
He turned out to be,
really
but
good.
We're talking about the expectations going into the game. And last week,
I'm not sure
that Deshaun Watson was the guy that was supposed to beat the Patriots going into last week.
I don't know. From about 1 to 4, he looked like it.
I said going into the game. You're gonna play along here?
I'm actually not.
Yeah.
No, you're right. They made him look better than they probably should have. He didn't look like the raw rookie quarterback we saw a week earlier where 49-yard touchdown, he wins the game, but that's really sort of all he did. He did it with his legs, his arm. He did it scrambling. He did it dropping back, traditional sense. Yes, you made him look really good. Now, will he be that moving forward the rest of his rookie year? I don't know.
And I think that Carolina, as you said, Fred, is not even as good as Houston on paper offensively. They've really struggled. And part of the reason, and I know Andy brought up the public enemy number one, you know, that Bill Belichick jokingly referred to Cam Newton, but they're really trying to keep him in the pocket. They're trying to keep him healthy. We know that he's never been a conventional quarterback runner. He's not one of these small, slippery guys that runs all over the place and makes huge plays. He runs over you. He's a very physical runner. He's a goal line. He's their goal line back.
He's a fullback who plays quarterback.
For lack of a better term, and that's really a tough way to make a living at that position. And I think, rightly so, the Panthers want to transition him out of that, but it hasn't gone well.
I actually don't think that the Patriots are going to have as tough a time going into this game as they did last week against the Texans.
But did you think that last week, talking about going into games?
Did you expect
to go down to the wire and need a touchdown in the final seconds?
No, but you can verify, you know, through our radio show that I thought it was going to be a closer game than some of the prognosticators
thought.
But
you didn't think Houston was going to score?
No, I didn't.
And they scored a lot.
Yeah, I think the same way going into Houston as I do this week. Now, last week I was wrong.
Yeah.
We'll see. I don't think the Panthers can score the way – I don't think they're going to get to 30 the way Houston did. But if they do, we're going to be having a different tenor to this conversation next week.
And this is the third straight week where we're talking about an opponent sort of being one-dimensional.
Yeah.
Either an offense, like New Orleans had an offense but no defense.
That's true.
Or the last couple where you say they have a defense but no offense. Well, you can also look at the Patriots and say, are you that? Are you a team with the number one offense in the NFL and the worst defense in the NFL? Is that what you are?
On sort of paper, that is what
right.
they are.
Turn it into one of those Big 12 programs.
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
and it's early. It's September.
Right.
I don't want to label them.
These teams.
Yeah, I don't want to label them. But right now, there's a lot of flawed teams battling each other early.
Okay, but let's go back to Carolina. Best defense on paper. Is that actually true?
Well, I think they've benefited from the teams they've seen so far. San Francisco, Buffalo, two low-powered offenses. They hold them both to 3 points. That really skews your numbers, especially this early in the season. They've only allowed 40 points in three games. So by any way you want to measure it, their yardage allowed, their points allowed is really very, very impressive. I just don't think they're as good as those numbers show, especially in the secondary.
Yeah, they definitely have, you know, the great linebackers, but, you know, we'll see.
So they have a great front. I think their front is very good.
I mean, listen, if we're doing the Carolina Panthers in progress, or, you know, weekly, we're looking at this game as this is a great test for our defense. This is going to answer some questions about our defense.
Right.
And they're going up against a guy 2 weeks in a row, AFC Offensive Player of the Week.
Yeah, Brady is, I mean, the numbers he's putting up are phenomenal. The things he's on pace to do, not just because he's 40, just the numbers in general. When you have 5 touchdowns, I don't care how old you are, that's great. When you're throwing at a, 120 passer rating clip, you know, that's great. The problem is, and I continue to beat this point home, so is the opposing quarterback. Like, the numbers Brady keeps putting up are sort of matched by the accumulation of the quarterbacks you've faced. I think the opposing passer is 113 rating through 3 weeks here. It's that juxtaposition. Great passing game, bad pass defense.
Right. But, you know, going back to Brady, it is pretty amazing what he's doing. And what I loved about what he did last week is that Brandon Cooks, you know, caught the game winner and then the 2-point conversion. And I think that just bodes well for this offense going forward.
Well, I think especially the ability to get the ball downfield. And we sort of joke, and I think, Andy, you and I have gone back and forth on this with other people talking about the need to get you know, maybe a deep threat into the offense. The offense has been so efficient. Do they really need that? Well, I think last week was sort of a microcosm of why that's important, because I think you get Cooks deep early in the game, and then you see Chris Hogan running across the field uncovered. You see some plays that are developing underneath that have to at least be partly due to the fact that Cooks is occupying so much attention down the field in all the big plays the Patriots offense would made last week. It's almost it used to be death by a thousand paper cuts when you played the Patriots. Not last week. There were five touchdowns, and you know, like I think four of them were big chunk plays, stuff that you don't really see a lot of the recent.
And you need
Patriots
that
attack.
Because you no longer have the paper cuts.
Yeah,
you don't have Edelman, and Amendola was used more as a punt returner. Didn't really get used as a receiver till late in the game when he came up clutch.
And that was
as he
a chunk
to
play
do.
Too. That wasn't
right.
really a.
So
slot,
you
slot
don't play. Have the slot receiver. Well, we got to find a different way to do it. One of your best. You have two really good yeah. weapons right now. It's Rob Gronkowski, who didn't look like the groin was an issue, was dominant in the goal line in the, you know, for a touchdown, was dominant on the final drive to kickstart it. And then obviously Brandon Cooks, I thought, was involved in almost every big play, either catching it and running, either getting behind a guy and catching it, or bringing the defense
drawing
to him,
coverage.
And all of a sudden
yeah.
Chris Hogan is uncovered.
And I think they're going to need those chunk plays in this game because, you know, that defense is legit
they
up
might.
Front for the Panthers. Patriots aren't going to expect to be able to run the ball or you know, even use their running backs out of the backfield on swing passes because they've got speed at linebacker. So they're going to have to loosen these guys up over the top. We might have to be okay with a few three and outs to prove that point.
Well, you also better get some improvement with your pass protection if you want to play it that way because Andy's right. The front for Carolina is pretty good. They don't have guys that, you know, are jumping off the page like a Von Miller might. But they have some pretty steady production getting pressure on the passer, and they have athletic linebackers that can be used in the passing game and you know, to create some pressure. I think Shaq Thompson has one of their eight sacks. So the offensive line is going to have to be better. They weren't very good last week.
All right. Do you think it will be?
I think it'll prove.
Yes.
Dante's track record is usually they'll bounce back after a bad game.
Three in a row.
Today's show is brought to you in part by W.B. Mason, the official office supplier of the New England Patriots. Who but W.B. Mason? Fisher Plows. The legacy rolls on. Visit FisherPlows.com. And also brought to you in part by AT&T. Entertainment your way.
This week's From the Heart, we're going to talk about a matchup Fred Kirsch teased earlier. Patriots number one offense, Panthers number one defense, Panthers number three on pass defense. I want to look at that because a year ago, number 29 in that area. They have two young cornerbacks. They're big, 6'1", 200-plus pounds, but inexperienced and not overly quick. Daryl Worley, James Bradbury, attack them. You have Brandon Cooks. You have Philip Dorsett. You have Danny Amendola. You certainly have matchups on the outside where quickness and speed beats size. Tom Brady's been going deep quite well. Keep doing it.
Coming into the season, I thought it was understandable that we had some questions about the Patriots' front seven on defense. What I didn't expect, however, with the struggles that we've seen so far in the secondary, specifically Devin McCourty at safety, to me, he's been the ultimate professional, the ultimate Patriot throughout his time. Started off at corner, moved to safety, and it really was a seamless transition. I think he has been absolutely outstanding back there. But over the first 3 weeks, there have been a lot of communication issues. I don't know if that's related to the newcomer, Stephon Gilmore, or just McCourty not playing well. I thought he was out of position at times against Houston. But for this defense to get any better, it's going to have to get better at the back end with the captain, Devin McCourty.
Trash Talk, brought to you by Waste Management. Remodeling or just have clutter to get rid of? Waste Management's new Baxter. Dumpster in a bag can take it on. Visit thebaxter.com for more info.
This week's Trash Talk segment, Paul just argued that the secondary needs to get better, but the pass rush has been equally unimpressive through 3 weeks for this 32nd-ranked defense. So I say, Paul, the pass rush is the reason you are as bad as you are. If they don't get more pressure, I don't care if you have Deion Sanders back there. People are going to throw on you. It's a two-part equation, mm-hmm. and the pass rush isn't good enough.
Yeah, you're right. The pass rush hasn't been good enough, but I don't expect it to be that much better because I'm not sure they have enough talent up there. But I do think in the back end, these guys are underperforming. I think Gilmore, Butler, McCourty, Chung, and I'll throw Daron Harmon in there because I consider him a de facto starter as well. These guys have proven in the past they can play better than they have, and they're not helping out that rush at all either.
How'd you win the Super Bowl?
Tom Brady. Tom Brady threw for about 800
yards. Trey Flowers, Chris Long, Dante Hightower with a strip sack. That's how they won the Super Bowl. The pass rush came through, and then that got the momentum for the offensive side of the ball for Tom Brady and James White to do their job. The pass coverage in the NFL is the hardest thing to do. The only way you can do it successfully is if you have a competent pass rush. And I thought coming into the season, hey, they've had issues. They had the retirement from Ninkovich. You thought maybe Coney Ealy would be here. You thought Derek Rivers would be here. But the issue is Trey Flowers, and Wise, by the way, has been a nice surprise. I think actually he may be overperforming in terms of what people expected.
He
needs to be more consistent across the board because you can't cover forever. It doesn't matter what you do back there. You can throw schemes at him. You can throw man and zone and quarters and everything you want in the world. But if you don't get more pass rush, and oh, by the way, tackle the guy when you pressure him. That's also an issue last week. We'll see if it's an issue this week. The front needs to carry more of the load.
Well, we'll be back next week. I think we're out of time.
I think I just kicked your ass.
No. Listen, you can talk all you want about how they can't get the pressure. They can't do this. I don't think that we're expecting constant pressure. And by the way, last year, that pass rush that won the Super Bowl, according to your fantasy
land. That's a lot of air quotes in one sentence.
They only had about 35 sacks for the season. So
I'm talking about the Super Bowl.
I was not expecting there to be Von Miller-like pressure on the outside for the Patriots. I was expecting Stephon Gilmore, Malcolm Butler to be lockdown corners. I think they have that ability. They're both Pro Bowlers. They have been to the Pro Bowl. Devin McCourty is a Pro Bowl player.
Lockdown doesn't exist anymore.
Of course it does, Andy.
Do you watch the league anymore? Come on,
It works
in
concert.
The best corners in football give up completions. The best corners are at their best when they get some rush with them.
Completions, but not the amount of yards that they've given up to a rookie quarterback last week.
It is physically impossible for a secondary to carry you. You need to inject some rush. And I don't care what the sack numbers say. Trey Flowers has 3 sacks. He has not been a consistent pass rusher this year, has he?
You just finished talking about how Dietrich Wise has been a pleasant surprise.
He has. And that tells you how far they need to go.
So they've actually had more pressure on the passer than you were expecting because he was a surprise to you.
Has been better. But Trey Flowers, to me, has been underwhelming as a pass rusher this year. I don't know where the rest of it is coming from. I don't know if Cassius Marsh can be a presence on the edge. I don't know where you're going to get it, but I can tell you one thing. If you don't get it, you're not going to be a top half of the NFL defense.
And if you don't get better performances by your better players on that side of the ball, it's not going to improve.
Tonight's show is brought to you in part by Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner and New England's best ticket source for all Patriots games. Visit aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS. Also brought to you in part by Pepsi, official soft drink of the New England Patriots. Around the NFL is brought to you by W.B. Mason, the official office supplier of the New England Patriots. Who but W.B. Mason?
It was a joke. Those must have been the words out of Von Miller's mouth last Sunday. The Broncos were trailing the Bills by 7 late in the game. Miller got to the Bills quarterback Tyrod Taylor to force a third down incomplete. After the play, Miller, who was friends with Taylor, pulled an old schoolyard trick, offering a hand to help Taylor off the ground and then taking it away. Both players thought it was funny, but not the ref. Miller was flagged for unsportsmanlike conduct. The Bills kept the ball and eventually kicked a field goal to put the game out of reach. The reaction after the game was pretty universal. The ref was probably the only one offended and shouldn't have thrown the flag. To Miller's credit, he took full responsibility for the penalty, but come on, that call was ridiculous. Regardless of when, the call should never have been made, but that was a huge moment in the game. It would have been nice to see the ref take back that flag the same way Miller took back his hand from Taylor. Psych!
Players' Perspective. Putnam Investments is a proud partner of the New England Patriots, pursuing performance excellence through the power of teamwork.
This week we're joined by Patriots defensive lineman Adam Butler. Adam, latest in the long line here of undrafted rookies that make the team. How much of that did you know before you got here?
I didn't, really know that many players, before me who were undrafted. But I did know that this culture was about, what you do when you get in the building. because me and Coach Belichick had that conversation prior to me accepting the offer to come here in the first place. And he made it clear, you know, it doesn't matter what round you're in. You know, as long as you work hard, you know, and take advantage of your opportunities here, then everything should be fine.
And there have been a lot of instances of that over the years. You had talked to us a little bit last week about that meeting with Coach Belichick and when he was down at Vanderbilt, and you got to talk to him and how excited you were to do that. What was that like?
That was, man, I was so shocked because, like I said last week when we talked about it, you know, I had no idea that he would be there, you know, for my pro day, you know, to see me, you know, run through the drills, you know, to see me, you know, run my 40 and all of that stuff. Man, and it was amazing. And we sat down for about 2 hours, and we just talked football, and that was it.
And one of the things that that Coach Belichick said stuck out to him was you could see right away your ability to play different spots, the versatility up front, play inside, play outside, and not only that, but you understood what your role was doing all those different things. Is that something you always pride yourself on?
Yeah, because I, like, throughout my career as a football player, I was always limited on opportunities. You know, as a matter of fact, when I got to high school and finally made it to varsity, I started out at guard. And then my senior year, I played tackle. And then the transition between my senior year at Duncanville to Vanderbilt, I played in this All-American Bowl. And I actually played center in the All-American Bowl. And then after I got to Vanderbilt and I played center, then that's when I moved to defensive tackle. And then when Coach Mason came, that's when I moved to defensive end. You know, so I've always, you know, just had to take whatever opportunities were available to me.
When you had that conversation with Coach Belichick, did you ever envision that, you know, 6 months later you'd be in the starting lineup for the defending Super Bowl champs?
No, I did not. And I didn't approach it that way. You know, I approached it as, you know what, I'm just going to give it everything I got, and whatever Coach Belichick has in store for me, you know, whatever God has in store for me is what I'm going to get. You know, because at the end of the day, as long as you give everything you got, then you'll sleep well at night, you know, no matter what happens.
Okay, I'm going to get away from football a little bit for a second. I'll wrap it up with this. You know, you're a kid from Texas. You end up in Nashville, Tennessee for college at Vanderbilt. Did you take to the country music at all? Is that something that you enjoyed there?
I actually did enjoy country music. I didn't get into it as much as I thought I would. But there's one song, it's called When It Rains, It Pours, that I really listen to a lot, and I forgot who the artist is that sings that, but I love that song.
You, your advisor, and Putnam, pursuing performance excellence through the power of teamwork. Patriots Football Weekly is brought to you in part by Pepsi, official soft drink of the New England Patriots.
All right, it's that time of the show where we answer the questions that you sent to askpfw@patriots.com. So we'll start out with Michael Hanrahan, who asks, which side of the ball should be easier to fix, the offensive line in trying to protect Tom Brady or the defensive line in trying to get pressure at the quarterback?
I think it's the offensive line. You know, you have a history there, not only with the players, but with the coaching staff, maximizing his talent with Dante Scarnecchia. You've invested there. They're young, and they've sort of grown together over the last 2 years. The continuity is all we hear about in the offensive line. They should be better than they are right now. The defensive line, maybe an issue of talent and having the horses to really run out there. And then even if you get the horses, getting them used to playing with each other. So offensive line the whole way.
Paul, you're nodding.
I agree. Yeah, there's more experience and talent on offense.
Stephen Van Norman writes, which player would you rather have, pre-ACL Deion Lewis or the current James White?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I love me some James White, as you guys all know, but pre-ACL Deion Lewis to me is the answer because I think he's more well-rounded. I think he showed that he could be a running back and actually line up in the backfield, run the ball between the tackles at a higher level than James White has ever shown that. I think they're both very gifted pass receivers. I think they both do a pretty good job in protection. But to me, the difference, pre-ACL Lewis was more elusive and electric in the open field, and he had more to offer as a running back, a true running back.
Okay. James Curtis, as dynamic, another Deion Lewis question, as dynamic as Deion Lewis is, why not use him as a wide receiver given the need at that position and the depth at running back?
Because you lose the advantage. He's not a wide receiver. That is not how he's built. He doesn't have the route running ability of a great wide receiver. He's a good receiver and route runner for a running back. We've talked about this in the past with different types of players. You know, Gronk is a great tight end. Line him up wide at all times on corners. Well, you can lose advantages when you do that. And I think Deion Lewis would be an example of that. Now, you can line them up wide. They split those guys out wide on occasion.
Sure.
But you're looking to kind of get a mismatch on a single play, a couple plays. If he's out there all the time, he's easier to cover.
All right. Sam Beckroft writes in, do you think that this year has been one of Bill's worst in terms of managing the 53-man roster and reserve list? Seems to me like Vincent Valentine and Malcolm Mitchell really should have started camp on PUP.
Well, I just hear the start of the question. Do you think this is one of Bill's worst? And I automatically say no. No. Why are we talking about that? Specifically to the PUP guys, Malcolm Mitchell was a guy that possibly could have been a candidate for PUP. He practiced the very first day of camp, and then he was out the second day. So clearly there was something going on there that maybe you had a decision to make. Valentine was ready for the start of camp. He practiced throughout the summer. He didn't get hurt until the preseason, so he wasn't a candidate. He didn't come into camp with a pre-existing injury, so he was never an option in that regard. But I think it's always easy after the fact to say you might have wanted to do this or that in terms of PUP guys. But the one thing to keep in mind, in order to be eligible for PUP to start the season, you can't participate in training camp. You have to open camp on active PUP to end up on reserve PUP.
And the second thing is,
both of those guys were active.
You can bring those guys back with the new PUP. I mean,
the new IR list.
You can only bring two of them, whereas PUP, it's unlimited. But you could bring those guys back if you want. You're just going to have to pick and choose who you bring back.
And remember, Bill's not a doctor. All right. That's this week's question.
Who are you?
Every week, send them to askpfw@patriots.com.